You're listening to the Mind Manual Podcast, episode 41, How to Cultivate Greater Resilience. If you want a particular result in your life, but you're unable to get it, tune in to start training your brain and expanding your emotional intelligence to unlock the most powerful and underutilized performance tool that we have. It's the most important work you could do because it affects every area of your life. Hello, everyone. How are things? What's your usual standard response to that question? Do you ever really think about that? And if you were to be brutally honest about it, would it err on the side of typically crappy or something along those lines? Isn't it true that it's just great to have the eyes to see this day, or the health to be engaging with your healthy children? Now, not all of us can say that at this point in time, but there is a ton of others that are similar that we could find that is great about this day. The reality is none of us get out of here alive, well and happy all of the time, untouched by the frailties of life here on earth. So what is it exactly that sets us apart from those who are able to bounce back bigger and higher? When we inevitably come across the challenging and often crushing times of our life. There have been many research scientists who have sought to solve this puzzle and put it all into an evidence-based theory. One such researcher is a lady by the name of Dr. Lucy Hone, a researcher who has studied resilience for over a decade. Now, given the way life works sometimes, Lucy was put to the ultimate test in having to put all the theories in the world, including her own, to practice after she tragically lost her 12-year-old daughter. Can't life be cruel sometimes? And what she painfully discovered as she swallowed this work is that none of it worked. So having been saddled with her own weight of grief and loss and suffering, she began the real work of finding her own way back, wading through the muddied reeds of the path that could easily swallow her into the quagmire of despair. So what came out of all those years and words of research papers were three simple steps that all resilient people do. Now, these people didn't become resilient overnight, just after tragedy struck. They practiced it habitually throughout their entire life. It became their way of being, and the side benefits of it is a life where you find lots of happiness and well-being in between the crappy times. Well-being is inextricably linked with resilience, so it's a muscle you can exercise and practice the whole way along. And when it comes time to face the ugly side of life, you'll be job fit, which makes you more likely to bounce back bigger and higher than all the others. This is resilience. And it was also her first discovery, accepting that tough times come to visit all of us during our human existence. This acknowledgement led her to ask the other question, why not me? This is a concept I have referred to in other podcasts as the 50-50 nature of life. We have arrived in a world of relativity where the equal and opposite exists for everything. And this includes our emotions. It is very evident in the physical world where we have night and day, winter and summer, El Nino, La Nina, birth and death and everything in between. When we look at the full spectrum of emotions available to us, we compare them in black and whites also. We have love, hate, happy, sad, anger, pleasure, peace, conflict, cruelty, kindness, and on they go. They are all available to us, not just the 50% of good emotions, but the 50% of bad emotions also. This extends to our circumstances as well. Can you think of a rock star, a successful entrepreneur, a super athlete, a celebrity who has all the resources available in the world to them that are perfectly well and happy all of the time? So many of them are in a mess in so many ways. The good news is, however, we can influence the way we experience all of it. We can co-create our own version of how we want to experience any situation or circumstance, even though the rest of the population may have deemed it to be intrinsically devastating. There are different ways to navigate these tough times. This led to the second key attribute of resilience, to focus on the things you have control over. It not only applies to the traumatic events of our life, it applies to the everyday. Our mind loves to heavily lean on the negative, scanning for threats, looking for what's wrong with something, and only seeing the other side of that 50% of life, in taking the good and flipping it to see the bad. And you will find the evidence for all of it. The filter of our perspective will take the good and find the threat in it, the bad that could also exist, which it does in this world of relativity. That's a given. They are the rules of this game. Some call it universal laws. Others put it into theories or formulas. Newton's third law states that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. This is the dichotomy of life. The equal and opposite exists for everything. The question then comes down to, which one do you want to focus on? A stressed out person stays focused on the other side of life, the other 50%. In fact, they get into a spiral and stay spinning on it around and around. They go in circles, stuck in a holding pattern, orbiting around the problem. Now, I'm not one for toxic positivity. I do want to pay attention and know about the dangers and potential threats that might exist. This is a great survival mechanism that we all have come pre-installed with. It has ensured the survival of our species. So I'll take it out to the worst case scenario and plan for that, but also try to keep that reality in perspective at the same time, which might come down to we're still alive, we have air to breathe, food to eat, and clothes to keep us warm. Then I might progress to what other resources do we have around us? This trajectory will start to open up all the possibilities that exist, that we're just not seeing because we're stuck in survival mode. But once you realize that you're still alive, it's time to get creative and open our eyes to the inherent abundant nature of life and everything we still have. When tragedy strikes and there is huge loss involved, it can often feel like we have lost all control. I mean, life has just shown us how very little we have had in that moment, right? So we have this sense of loss of control that we become hypervigilant to, which feels scary and like we need to go back into the cave where it's safe. This is one of the illusions that is shattered during these times, that we think that we live in a world we can control. The reality is, though, we don't have control over most things out there in the world. And we most certainly don't have control over any adult. It's just that we don't focus on that. It doesn't really feature in our everyday awareness. Day in, day out, we place our faith in a thin strip of paint in the middle of the road to separate us from oncoming traffic. Dr. Lucy Hone and the rest of us on Earth have no control over what the driver will do coming towards us. We cannot control whether he looks at his phone or not, whether he stops at that stop sign. But what can help us during this time, as Lucy discovered, was to focus instead on what you can control. And the big one here is we can control the way we think about something. Although it doesn't feel like it because most of the time we live on autopilot, we can become conscious narrators of our environment. We can choose to tell better stories about our life. Lucy could continue on, very well justified, telling the tragic story about losing a 12-year-old daughter. Or she could focus on the other two beautiful children she still has. This was how she decided to start thinking about it. She thought they deserved also to have the best life they could make of it. And she put her time and attention on that. Going to the very opposite extreme of that, I just finished reading an article from the Batuta Advocate, which is an online satirical digital publication here in Australia that reports on current issues affecting everyday Aussies in a way that might reflect what they're really thinking. It's a very funny example of what I'm talking about here. Taken to the extreme, a sheep farmer tells us the story about his life, everything that he's not happy about, using the most expletives you could possibly fit into one article. And I'll link to it in the podcast notes on the website. But a word of warning, it is Aussie humour and it's not for the faint-hearted or the little ones. You can find it over at themindmanual.com/episode41. And I'll also provide a link to the Dr. Lucy Horne's TED Talk for those who are interested in her story. So on to the third element or secret of resilience that Lucy discovered was to ask the question, does this way of thinking, what I'm doing or way of being, help me or harm me? This is a magical question that we should be asking ourselves at every turn. If we thought about ourselves as something to protect and something to nurture in the same way as we are with our children or those we hold dearly, then we would be a whole lot more vigilant in what we expose ourselves to and doing the thing that is in our best interest and for our highest good. I mean, most of us have this view with our children. We just need to extend it to ourselves. If you find yourself poring over photos, as Lucy did, of what was, and you're gripped in the suffering of what could have been, is that helping you or harming you? If you don't allow yourself to enjoy your other children because you've gone too far down into that deep dark hole and you can only think the one you have lost, is that helping you or harming you? They are harsh questions, I know, particularly as they relate to the worst type of suffering I think there could be in losing a child. But it is a very legitimate and logical question to ask, and one that only goes to the very core of our well-being and interest. I think we should all be asking this question of ourselves with everything we do, every perspective or thought we choose, every action we take or don't take. It's like the most basic drafting tool we have for setting our life up for success and weathering the storms as they pass. The problem is we never think about it that way. Or if we do, we don't think we matter enough to place any importance or give priority for ourselves. We think that living a life in mourning, regret, and sufferance is a way of honoring the fallen or a show of how important they are by denying ourselves and everyone else around us who continue to live on. And there's no doubt they are important and special and may have been your whole world. Except, do you really want to stay down in that place? Or do you want to find something worth living for? I didn't feel like I had that luxury when I lost my husband because I had two little children who still needed me, which I'm so grateful for. But I've seen many others who didn't have that and very much stayed in that place and became the living dead. It ultimately does come down to a choice. And I think it would serve all of us if we kept asking this question to ourselves. Does it help me or harm me? I mean, who needs enemies when we've got ourselves? Look at the terrible suffering we inflict on ourselves every day in thinking this way instead of that way, which causes this painful emotion over a more empowering one, compelling us to take this action over a more favorable one that would produce a way better outcome or result. At any point along that cause and effect chain reaction, we could have asked ourselves this question and drafted ourselves off onto a very different pathway. Instead, we get caught up in the immediate short-term relief at the expense and sacrifice of our longer-term well-being. In thinking, that extra bottle of wine will make me feel better, if only for an hour, then how much worse off are we? Or that highly processed food or sweet treat that we know is so bad for us, but tastes oh so good? We kid ourselves by saying, how we deserve it, and I've had a hard day, I need a treat. If we stopped and spent a second about the harm it is doing to us, we would realize that it is slowly killing us, and at the very least, leaving us in a greatly impaired state of physical as well as mental health. What lies beneath all of that is the relationship we have with ourselves and the inability to process emotions, which leaves us with the only other way we know how to deal with it, which is to suppress it or distract ourselves with an unhelpful activity or substance. This process or cycle of setting up our biological system by flooding it with hormones and neurotransmitters that make us feel good in the moment and takes us very temporarily away from feeling bad is a very addictive cycle. If we could see how we're setting ourselves up to fail here by not asking ourselves that question and valuing our longer-term well-being over a temporary hit of pleasure or relief, we wouldn't do it if, and this is a big if, we truly loved and honored ourselves. This is key. Behind every act of self-sabotage or bad decision that harms us is someone that doesn't really value or love themselves. Not in a conceited way, but in a way that a parent loves a child. That child that remains in all of us is still there, waiting to be loved and acknowledged by you. You may have missed out on it from your caregivers or not. It doesn't matter either way. No one can take the place of giving this to you, in having your own back and being there for you. This is the greatest gift you could give yourself and the rest of the world. It forms the foundation from which we then move on to mastering our mind and emotions. So back to Lucy and her real life learnings about resilience, which flew in the face of all of those years and years of research on resilience that she then threw out the window and replaced with these three simple steps that anyone can learn and practice until it becomes your new default way of being. Not only will you become way more resilient, your well-being will go through the roof. The first was acknowledge the 50-50 of life. The second was focus on the things you can control. And three, does this help me or harm me? For those who are yet to go through a life-altering event and are interested in achieving optimal well-being across all areas of your life, you can learn the skills that lead to the good life in the midst of a chaotic and stressful world. In 1998, Dr. Martin Seligman, as the new incoming president of the American Psychological Association, made the inaugural shift from the focus of mental illness and pathology to studying what is good and positive in life. He became the pioneer of positive psychology, which guided his research work in developing a model for a flourishing individual, which became a well-being theory known as PERMA Plus model. Seligman went on to explain what positive psychology means. He describes it as taking you through the countryside of pleasure and gratification, up into the high country of strength and virtue, and finally to the peaks of lasting fulfillment, meaning, and purpose. It's essentially a version of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, who was the first to coin the term positive psychology. And I'm currently in the process of crafting a short course on this that will be available inside the Mind Scholars membership. We will go through the five elements or components of that model that we can then go and apply in practice with all the coaching you'll need for clearing the obstacles that keep us stuck right where we are. So for anyone wanting to optimize your happiness and well-being, we can get started together over at themindmanual.com/join. Go and find the beauty in your day, folks, and marinate in it. Have a beautiful week. We'll see you soon.